Welcome to Pretty Lies and Alibis. Let's seek the truth and travel the long road to justice together. What you know, alibiers? Happy Monday. I'm Gigi. Welcome to another episode of Pretty Lies and Alibis. And we are starting week two of the Alec Murdoch murder, double murder trial. But first, got a few things to take care of. Big thank you to Jennifer last week for the Venmo donation. I really appreciate your generosity. Also, JMST Girl, Kendall, Laura, and Dana for the Buy Me a Coffee donations. One thing I learned today, why are potential witnesses allowed in the courthouse? Well, neither side have requested that potential witnesses be sequestered. So there's your answer. Also, South Carolina Attorney General Alan Wilson was in court today for the first time. Also, Nancy Grace is here, Vinnie Politan, all kinds of familiar faces in the true crime world showing up today. Also, the public showed up. There was probably more people in that courtroom today than I've seen since this started. Maybe it's because people didn't expect jury selection to be so quick. You know, last week it was, hey, we have 80 jurors, we have 60. Oh, we have a jury and alternates, and we're starting openings in a couple of hours. It went really fast. People from as far away as Florida and Canada that I talked to today. So a lot of interest in this trial by the public. And so music fact of the day before we jump right in. Queen is the only band that every single band member wrote at least one hit song. Love Queen. I was jamming to him on the way down here last night. So if you remember on Friday, we had SLED Special Agent Melinda Worley on the stand and direct was ended. And defense attorney Harpootlian said it was going to take several hours to cross-exam, and he was not kidding. So that's where we started today, was cross-exam. And so she went to the crime scene, and Colleton County was to secure the scene. And Harpootlian said they disturbed the scene. He mentions pulling up, he talks about Colleton County was just there to secure the scene and said they disturbed the scene. He mentions them pulling up the sheet off of Paul's body to look for a weapon. And she said they should not have been stepping in the crime scene. And when asked what other evidence they might have destroyed, she said she had no idea. So Harpootlian said, that's right, we don't. Talk about trace evidence being disturbed. That was another thing that he discussed. And she said they marked things of interest so they would not be disturbed. He talked about the blackout ammunition that was found near Maggie's body. And there was a defect seen in the doghouse. But when asked if they took measurements of that, she said they did not. They show the feed room door and the trajectory on this small animal cage that doesn't appear to have come from the feed room. Now, we know the feed room is where Paul was shot. Maggie was about 30 yards outside that shed. But the shot was from an AR and fired many feet from the feed room, but ended up in there. Here's the thing. They did not test those projectiles to see if it passed through Maggie's body. So what the defense is doing here is they're really attacking how this crime scene was handled, not secured, things weren't done that should have been done, that kind of thing. And there was a defect in the doghouse. Harpootlian notes that also she's saying on the stand it was 84 degrees, I guess the angle that the shot came in, and in her notes she has 96 degrees. Now, here's what's interesting. There was what looked to be a possible footwear impression on Maggie's calf, on the back of her calf. Remember, she was face down. It had line patterns that were dirt or mud, and they didn't do anything with it. Once the bodies are removed, a lot of those things can't be done. You kind of miss those opportunities. She said she did not notice that impression on Maggie's leg and did not document it as she would have if she had seen it as a possible footwear impression, because that's part of her specialty. As far as Paul's footwear impressions, they were able to tell some of those in the feed room were his. So after he was shot in the abdomen, he faced the back of the feed room. We're not sure how he ended up face down kind of outside the feed room door, but they were able to determine, you know, that those were Paul's shoes. We went through that last week where they showed the footwear impressions and the ink patterns of his shoes. So, but there were also impressions inside that feed room that were not Paul's. And it came from a deputy. So defense attorney Harputlian said, is that the preservation of the scene that your standards require? And she said, no. He said, should police have been walking through that scene? And she said, no. He asked, do you know what other evidence they might have destroyed? And she says, no. And he said, that's right. You don't know. He also questioned why blood was never tested on an ATV found near Maggie's body. We know in previous testimony, there was some biological evidence on that ATV. And he said, the night you saw that blood, did you take a swab of it? Or whatever you thought was blood, did you swab it? And she said, no, I didn't. He said, so we don't know if that's human blood, deer blood, whatever. He said, matter of fact, there's a pool of water around Paul. Did anyone ask you to take a sample of that? And she said, no. So July 12th, back to the Moselle property. This is when they hit a really good point, I think the defense did. He has Agent Worley come to this diagram and talk about the angles between the locations of where the shots came from and brings up the point that it could have been from two shooters. She also says it could have been because the victims were moving. But they point out where those AR shots came from, and he said way up there. 3 dozen yards from the feed room. And he said, could that have been a person who was a lookout? Is that reasonable? And she said, yes. And I think that that's a big thing when you get the state's witness to admit there could have been two shooters or a lookout. That kind of is a big deal to me, I think. You know, it kind of can put some reasonable doubt in there. We'll see what happens. But the quality also of the bloody footprints of Paul were not good. And Harputlian pointed this out. You should have good lighting. You should have a scale next to it for size. None of that was done. And also a downward angle photo taken. So here's another thing that really kind of blew my mind. If you followed the George Wagner trial with us, we talked about the Faro scanner a lot. It's a 3D scan of the crime scene. It's very cool stuff. Go on YouTube and look up Faro scanner crime scene. It's very interesting. And what it can do is show the crime scene in 3D as it is well after the bodies have been removed. But here's the thing. The Faro scanner in this case wasn't taken until July 16th. Remember, the murders happened on July 7th. I don't understand why they didn't wait till daylight on the 8th and do this Faro scanner. But she said the night of the murders, it was raining. So at this point, we have a break because Harputlian was having to go back and kind of go to the desk, and it was taking time to get some things in order. So the judge is like, let's take a break. And so when we come back from break, they had nothing else for this witness. So next up was SLED Special Agent Jeff Croft. And he found Rogan Gibson. Now, this is the young man whose dog was at the Moselle property that Paul was talking to through text about shortly before the murders. And he allowed Special Agent Croft to look at his phone communications with Paul and Maggie that night. He had communications with both. So they go through these incoming calls and texts to Paul and Maggie minutes before the murders. And I think this also could set up a bit of a timeline for the murders. So Paul and Rogan talk at 8:40 p.m. There's an incoming call at 8:44 p.m. from Rogan to Paul. Rogan texts Paul at 8:49 p.m. And he says, quote, see if you can get a good picture to send to the vet. Tell him to sit and stay. So, end quote. It's actually not quote. It's kind of what I wrote in my note. Sorry about that. But there's no response from Paul. So we know at 8:49, Paul's not responding to his calls. What time does Alex say he left the house? 9:06. So there is a text at 9:58 from Rogan to Paul, and it says, yo. He tried to call Paul at 9:10. 9:29, and then at 9:34, Rogan sends a text to Maggie, tell Paul to call me. Of course, no response. At this point, we know both Maggie and Paul have been murdered. He also tries to call Paul at 9:42, 9:57, and 10:08 p.m. Rogan also tries to call Maggie at 9:34. He tries to call Alec at 10:21 and 10:24. Now, Alec tries to call Rogan back at 10:25 and 10:30. Now, Rogan also agreed to have a buccal swab taken. That's where they swab the insides of your cheeks, just, you know, to rule him out. So they show a body cam of the search of the gun room at the Moselle property, and it is slap full of people. How are you allowing so many people inside what is being searched as part of a crime scene? There were several people there, attorneys for Alex and things like that. But still, I mean, it looked more like a gathering than it did a search warrant being executed. So they show this gun. I mean, this thing is massive. It's scary looking. It looks like something you would see in some kind of like a video game. It's the 300 Blackout. That's from the gun vault. And they show magazines from rifles. They show those to the jurors. Those are ammos, the SMB 300 Blackout thermal scope, which a thermal scope is used to shoot in the dark, which I think is interesting. This is not the murder weapon. As far as we know, they have not been recovered. He also sees all these kinds of different ammo. And he explains the 300 Blackout has more stopping power than the 223 ammo, but a 223 magazine is capable of housing that 300 Blackout ammo. It's the same ammo used to kill Maggie. It ejects from the right side of the gun to the back. They show a 12-gauge pump shotgun with the breech open, and in the chamber is a shotgun shell ready to be fired. They bring that into the courtroom. So they collect these spent rounds around the property after collecting the guns during the search warrant. So Croft walked outside and saw spent shell casings of Blackout ammo looking weathered on the stair stoop. The brass was tarnished. It had dirt and grass on it. And he asked another agent to step out to secure those shell casings. So on June the 8th, the day after the murders, they searched the shed on the property and they took the trash away from the house. In the trash, they found two empty ammunition boxes plus a receipt from Gucci for $1,021.10. Something on that receipt was circled, but I don't think anything of evidentiary value was found in that trash. They did additional search on the 13th of June looking for any firearm shell casings or anything like that to be tested. These are just pictures of some of the guns, by the way. There'll be a link in the description for the new listeners. Anything that I put on YouTube, I try to put a link in the description so you can see the pictures that I'm talking about. But it's a hunting property. It's like an arsenal. They're everywhere, apparently. At that time, when they did this additional search on June 13th, they found more 300 Blackout ammo on the property. It seems like it was kind of everywhere. A lot of spent casings, magazine that fits AR-style rifles, and filled with Blackout ammo. So also, the day after the murders on the 8th, they recovered Maggie's cell phone about a quarter to a half a mile away from the crime scene on the side of the road. I'm very curious how it got there. Hopefully we learn that. The photo was taken of the phone with a gloved hand by an agent, and the passcode, I believe, was given by Alec and entered, and it worked. So immediately they locked it back and they wrote the passcode on a sticky note and gave it to crime scene. So then they bring out her cell phone to show to the jurors. Now, a new guy we're going to introduce who did not testify, but his name is John Banfield, and he is a DNR officer, and he has a side business where he builds parts on firearms. So the witness actually knew him and knew prior to these murders that he had made these 300 blackouts for Alec, and he had modded guns for him. So he called a second time and asked if he built a third 300 Blackout to replace that one that was allegedly stolen from Paul's car, and he said he did. So on June 16th, there's some more body cam footage from collecting shell casings, and during the investigation, they learned the family used a shooting range that was part of the Moselle property but was across the street, so they went there to search. They show photos of the inside of this shoot house where you can sit and shoot. They found some spent shotgun shells there and a lot of 300 Blackout casings as well. So this interview with Alec from June the 10th, is from his brother's house. And right at the beginning, he asked to take a call and they say, okay. And he says he's meeting with law enforcement and he'll call back. And it says, did Chelsea call you? Can you let Chelsea know to find Lynn? Get any secretaries to find her. And they also wanted to examine Alex's cell phone and ask for his consent to do so, or they download the contents. And he asks if he can keep his phone. And they say, yeah, we're going to do it here. They also say that a taint attorney will look at it. And Alex said, what's that? Well, it's actually someone who isn't affiliated with the case in any way. And Alex also tells the officer that he texts a lot of his clients. He doesn't really do email much. And this person talks of John Bendenfield, who is his cousin and is who made that, those guns for Alec. At this point, Alec says, but I get the phone back, right? So Monday morning, Maggie and Buster, he was asked to kind of tell the events of the weekend. Maggie and Buster went to baseball games that weekend. And on Monday morning, Alex said he went to work and he was kind of dragging from the weekend. And he said he usually messes around on the farm and then goes to work. He said he was getting ready for motions in the civil case that Thursday, which we know he was named in the civil case in that boat crash. So he lets them know that. When he left to go to work, Maggie was there. He can't remember if Blanca, the housekeeper, was there or not. He left work earlier than normal because Paul was coming home earlier that afternoon. They were going to replant sunflowers. If you remember, he said CB Rowe, the groundskeeper, killed their sunflowers and they were going to replant them. And he was prepping for that. He said they knocked around doing things like we do there. Paul had been in Charleston for the weekend and works for John Marvin, which is Alex's brother and Paul's uncle. So Paul decided to spend the night with John, and he said the two of them were very close. And so Sunday night, he came home. So Paul spent the night with John Marvin Sunday night. Alec came home Monday afternoon. He said around 5, it was broad daylight, and they rode around to see how much corn was in the dove field. He said that Paul was showing Alec how much better his corn was doing than Alec was, and he said, we rode around so much. More than an hour, he said, Mama wasn't home yet. She had gone to a doctor's appointment. He talks about a little target practice. He said it wasn't for long. They were shooting at a bottle with a .22 gun. Let me tell you all about our sponsor of the week, Pros. There's no one-size-fits-all solution when it comes to hair care, and that's because your hair and your hair goals are completely unique. My hair is dry and frizzy. I wanted to get rid of these problems. Thanks to my personalized Pros routine, I can honestly say I've never been in more love with my hair. First, Pros asked me for my hair goals, which was smoother hair with color protection. Their in-depth consultation also asks about you as a person. Pros ask me really unexpected things like my age, hair length, do I get split ends, and even my zip code, so that Pros can factor in the environment my hair lives in. Next, Pros analyzed all my answers and handpicked clean ingredients to help me reach my hair goals. I used the Scalp Remedy, Clarifying Cleanse, Color Extending Shampoo, and the Smoothing Solution Volume Building Conditioner. I also used the Boris Hairbrush that makes my hair super smooth. My hair is completely different. The frizz is gone and it's so much softer. All their ingredients are sustainably sourced, ethically gathered, and cruelty-free. They're also the first custom beauty brand to go carbon neutral. If you're not 100% positive Pros is the best care hair you've had, they will take the products back, no questions asked. You know your girl's been lacking in the sleep department lately, but I found something that helps me sleep much better when I do sleep. Who knew that a better pillowcase is all you need for better sleep? Let's talk about practicing self-care while you sleep. Set yourself up with better sleep this year with Blissey's award-winning 100% mulberry silk pillowcases. It gives you better hair and skin. Seriously, silk, it's what's best for your hair and skin. It reduces frizz, tangles, and prevents breakage. That's because it keeps the moisture in your hair and your skincare products and natural moisture on your skin, unlike cotton does. You can say goodbye to wrinkly, dry, flaky skin in the morning and wake up with healthier and shinier hair that won't take you an hour to fix. Blissey's pillowcase regulates temperatures, keeping you cool at night. You don't have to flip the pillow anymore. Thank goodness. Unlike other silk pillowcases, these are the highest quality silk. And guess what? They're machine washable and durable. Valentine's Day is coming up, so why not give the gift of better sleep? Plus, it comes in gift-ready packaging they'll be sure to love. I love that the pillow stays cool. I don't have to flip it. And no more sleep lines. Everybody loves them. They have a ton of different prints and colors, and they make great gifts because there's an option for literally anyone. Hey, men, they love them too. They have over 1 million raving fans, and you need to be next. Try now, risk-free for 60 nights at blissy.com/whattheworld. Get an additional 30% off. That's Blissy, BLISSY.com/whattheworld, and use code WHATTHEWORLD to get 30% off. Your skin and your hair will thank you. So at this point, they're all back at the house together. Maggie was home. They ate supper. He said they usually eat together. And also he talks about Paul was having high blood pressure and Maggie was really worried about that because Paul's feet had started to swell. He said they hung around the house. Maggie went to the kennels and Paul left. He doesn't know where or how Maggie got to the kennels and he wasn't sure where Paul went. He said sometimes she would walk, drive a four-wheeler or a buggy. He said Paul was not much of a walker. Maggie went to the kennels and he assumes Paul went there as well. He said he stayed at the house, turned the TV on, looked at his phone, fell asleep on the couch. And he said, when you get my phone, the first thing I did was call Maggie. I'm going to my mom's. Didn't answer. He texted her at 9:06, went to mom's. So he leaves. He wasn't sure if he called Paul or not. He said, I was certain I heard them pull up. Now, at this point, he talks about hearing a car pull up. So this is back when he's at the house. It kind of jumped around a bit. But he's saying, people don't just come out there. Can't tell you what it sounded like. He said he thought it sounded like what was a car pulling up. He said that happened not long between him waking up and leaving the house. He said when he went outside, get this, y'all. Me and Anjanette looked at each other like, what? When he went outside, there's a wild cat that hangs out around the property. And he said, I'm pretty sure it was the cat who ran away from my car. He said, I'm not under the impression it was a person. So y'all figure that one out. He drove to his mom's and talked to Shelly for a few minutes. That's her caregiver. And he talked about calling people, John Marvin, Chris Wilson, Buster, who was in Rock Hill at that time, by the way. People have asked, was Buster around at the time of the murders? No, Buster was confirmed to be a while away. And I think Randy was actually the one that had to call him and tell him that that his mom and brother had been murdered. At that point, Alex said he was working that Buster was working a part-time job at Wild Wings, but he was going back to law school. His girlfriend was studying for a bar exam, so he was with her. So then Alex said he left his mom's, went home, got to the house, went inside. Nobody's in there. He goes to the kennels and, you know, he said he saw Maggie and Paul laying there and he knew it was bad. He went there and saw it and called 911. He decided to go get the gun because the scene had him freaked out. So he drove to the house to get that shotgun. He doesn't know. He said he didn't know which gun he grabbed. He said, goes back to Paul getting threats and things like that from the boat accident. And so the investigator said, who stands out in your mind besides the boat incident and would want to come after Paul or Maggie? And he says, Alex says he can't think of anyone who would go to that extreme. Lots of threats from people towards Paul, but he really didn't have any idea and said that Paul's close friends may know more. He said in-person confrontations, again, his friends might be able to tell you, but people would say, you're going to tell me who was driving that boat and things like that. Also, he said he didn't know who was on the boat with Paul. Now, I'm going to have to go back and listen to that, but I'm pretty sure that's what he said. I think he was asked who was on the boat, and he said, I don't know who was on the boat with Paul. If I'm wrong, correct me, please, but that's what I had written down. He said the biggest, what he was asked, what issue did you have with Paul? Like, what did you have to correct him about the most? He said the biggest issue he had with Paul was irresponsibility. He said Paul had ADHD, and he said he had so many wonderful qualities, but would jump from thing to thing and not finish what he had just done, which I totally relate to. I was diagnosed this year or last year. And it's a game changer when you're diagnosed. I never knew my brain could be so focused. So he had clothes all over the state, he said. So when he would go visit somebody, he would just leave his clothes there. So when he would go visit people, he wouldn't even take clothes because it was likely he had clothes there. And also he mentioned he had guns all across the state. Also, one thing, he did not have a girlfriend at the time of his murder. So a lot of people were wondering, were they still together? No, they were not. Actually, Paul came to my hometown in Greenville, all of them, where they had a family thing for someone who was having a baby. Paul came Friday and left Saturday to go to Charleston. Alex stayed in Greenville to play golf. Monday, Maggie had a doctor's visit in Charleston. He said she had a couple of things going on. She and Buster were at the Carolina regional ball games that weekend before the murders. They lost. South Carolina Gamecocks. So Paul was in Charleston. Maggie got home after Alec, and Paul went to mess around in the field. So we kind of covered that before. Excuse me. She got back, and when they got back to the house, Maggie was home at that point. He doesn't think she had been home that long, though. He says that the housekeeper, Blanca, cooked dinner that night. And when asked about their relationship, he said that their relationship was very good as it could be. They had issues, of course, but it was wonderful. And their biggest arguments would be about her wanting to go stay at her parents' house longer than Alec and the boys wanted to. He said she would get ticked off about that. He said he loved them to death, talking about his in-laws. And then he said they didn't argue, him and Maggie, and then he started sobbing. He said she was a wonderful wife and a great mom. She thought she was privileged to not have to work so she could take care of Alec and the boys. And so when they were riding around, he asked if they were at the kennels, and Alec said they probably did. He said they tinker in there for long periods of time, but that day they didn't tinker that much. They switched trucks also while they were riding around that day. So they talk about the 20 to 25 weapons that he had, and he wants to know what kind of weapons they have. He said that Paul had guns scattered all over, so some just aren't there. And he asked, do you want to know what was in there on the night of the murders? And Alex said, everything there minus the shotgun that y'all got. So they show pictures of these guns. And so the guns really weren't moved in and out of the house. He talks about Paul would go shoot hogs when he was home and would shoot them with Buster's 300 Blackout. Paul said his Blackout got stolen, and it had been stolen some time ago. So he used Buster's Blackout a lot of the times. Alex said he gave them both one years ago, and then he said sometimes Paul would use a rifle to shoot pigs. Alec moved some guns from the small case to the big case because her parents were there after the fact. So I'm assuming after the murders, they were at Moselle. They would have been in the gun room when they came to visit initially. So on June 8th, there were some questions. Did you keep guns at the kennels? He said, we didn't keep them, but they were there. He said, Paul was the worst. He would leave anything anywhere, so it's not unusual for guns to be out there at the kennels. Alex said the 300 Blackout was used was not out there at the kennel, and says it was in the house because they had that one. There's three, and they have one in their possession sled, so there's two that are gone. Paul said one was stolen or lost, but Alex said it wasn't. He wasn't convinced it was stolen, more like lost. And he was asked if he reported it. He said people were told about it. He told the guy who made the gun and also local officers in case it ended up in what he called a drug thing. But Alec didn't make an official report, which seems odd. You would want, if a gun's registered to you, he's a lawyer, you'd make that report, right? Alec thought Paul got another Blackout, which would be the third one, but Buster said no. Alec was certain he did get a replacement, but he said that's been gone a substantial while too. The blackout guns were identical except for colors. Buster still has his. Buster's was black and Paul's was tan. Alec said there should be a record of that, and he says, I know we replaced it. And then he had talked to CB Rowe since the murders, and Alec said he can't keep him because he's an idiot. Sorry, CB. Alec can't see CB killing them, though. And then they go to talking about that crazy story about where apparently CB was hired by the FBI to be this undercover guy to take out extreme Black Panther members. This is the craziest story I think I've ever heard. But the officer says being in law enforcement so long and how isolated the Moselle property is, someone randomly coming at night who doesn't know the property just doesn't seem plausible, essentially. And Alec says, so you don't think it's random? You think it's intentional and planned? Alec says, so do you have any good clues? The officer says the evidence we collected at the scene and the autopsy, they're putting a rush so that we can get quick answers. And Alec says, is it something you think will be helpful? The officer says the DNA swabs may be helpful. And then he asks Alec for a buccal swab, that cheek swab. And Alec said, that's not a problem. The officer also says they've talked to close to 100 people and they're still tracking people down. Alec says, I want to tell you something while I'm thinking about it. He was intuitive, talking about Paul, said he was like a detective. He said Paul was secretive with the cell phone. They didn't have Paul's code. Law enforcement didn't have it. Alec said he would try to find it, but he said it would surprise him if anybody knew his phone. The officer said they're looking at every angle for motive, the boat case, friends. He said there's a lot of people working on this case. There's people looking at hours and hours of video. And Alec says, thank you very much. The officer says when y'all ate and you laid down and you got up, they were gone. Alec said, I'm not sure, but they were not there when he woke up. He last saw them when he was eating supper. And the officer says, you get back and you found, and Alec starts sobbing. And he said, that's why we want to do the DNA, essentially, you know, just to see what they could find. Then he asked, when you tried to turn Paul over, was it towards or away from the kennels? And Alec said it was away. He was asked if Paul was right or left-handed, and Alec said right-handed. When asked, where did he usually keep his phone, meaning Paul, Alec said, well, usually in his hand. He said it was always on him, in his hand, his pocket, his truck. He said Maggie carried her phone anywhere she could. Then Alec asked if they got any prints from her phone, and the officer says he hasn't gotten anything back from the lab yet. So then he asked Alec, when Paul's phone came out, did you just place it on him? And Alec said, I didn't try to open it or anything. I don't know how I had, but in my mind, I didn't want to mess anything up. Somehow I had that presence of mind not to mess anything up. The officer said, you saw a traumatic picture and I know it's hard. So Alec just starts boohooing. Now here's the big thing today. All right. This is kind of all the big headlines. And I'm going to tell you, I have jammed these AirPods in my ear 50 times and jacked up the volume. So Alec's sobbing. He says, it's just so bad. They did him so bad. Now, some people heard with their own ears him say, I did him so bad. Y'all, I have listened to this and I am like 99.999% certain he said they did him so bad. He said he's such a good boy too, and he shakes his head in court. And so they pause here, and the state asked the witness, what did Alec just say? And the witness said, I did him so bad. And you see Alec immediately, if you're watching. At this point, I was actually in the media center because I can type better and hear better in there. It's easier for me to do what I do actually in there. But it's also good to be in court. But I watched his reaction to that. And he's just shaking his head like, I didn't say that. And you can see him mouth that. Alex said, I would like to be updated so I can update her family. He said they just have so many questions. And then when asked about them, he said they're in good health, but they're starting to get some age on them. He said they're at Moselle now. And the officer said he'll go speak with them if he did, if he needed to reassure him. And Alec thought that was a good idea. He said it would be nice for them to have a tangible person to talk to instead of being told secondhand what's going on. And then he lists off names of the family members. So they give Alec the name and the cell of the victim's advocate for him and Buster. And so the officer says that he thought Alec and Buster could benefit from some grief counseling. And Alec said he did assistant solicitor's work and was very familiar with victims' advocates and their role. So then they talk about the arrangements for Paul and Maggie. He said they planned the funeral. Alec said it was tomorrow, the next day, but he said Maggie and Paul won't be ready until next week. And then they're having a private family thing once, I guess, their bodies are turned over and then they were cremated. Someone asks if he thinks they're done with the phone, and the officer says he'll check and bring it to Alec when he's done. They say they will now do the buccal swab, and then Alec says, do I need to spit out my tobacco? So that was the end of direct, and that's what ended court. But the big thing today was, you know, it's kind of like that thing on the internet, is the dress gold or blue? And some people hear him say, I did him, what was it? I did him bad, or let me find the exact word, but you get my point. Some people hear I, and I heard they. I never heard I, but they made a point to pause after that was said in court and ask the witness, what did he say to you? Now, I wonder if the defense is going to be getting on some kind of enhanced audio stuff to really clear that up. And I don't know, but it's something now that's out there and everybody's really 50-50 on it. So that's it for Monday's testimony. And so tomorrow we'll be cross-examined this witness, which I expect to be maybe some fireworks, especially with that statement. I have to say, when Alec was brought out to leave the courthouse today, this is the first time he looked mad, upset. Usually he smiles and nods at the officers or whatever. He did not. He looked very upset today. So I don't know if it revolves around this. I'm sure it would, but yeah, so you guys can go, it's on the very, go to Law and Crime, go to their YouTube and pull up today's testimony. It's right in the last maybe 10 or 15 minutes. You'll hear the audio and then they pause. See what you think for yourself, but I really do think he said they. Anyways, going to be a good week. It is amazing having Anjanette here. Y'all, she's precious. We gel. She's fun to be with. She knows everybody. Everybody stops and says hi to her, and it's just great working with her. I wasn't on the Q&A very long today. I had some audio problems with my earpiece, but we got that all set. So tomorrow I'll be back on for the full Q&A, which is always fun. And yeah, so follow Law and Crime Network all across the platforms. That's going to be on their TV channel, also on their YouTube every day. And if you don't subscribe to my YouTube, go ahead and hit subscribe, hit that little bell. It'll let you know every time I upload something. So tomorrow night, we'll do this again. I'll bring you the best of testimony wrapped up in, this has been 35 minutes, so not too bad. Also, want to thank my sponsors for the week, Pros and Blissey. Pros is amazing, y'all. My hair is like got body and it's super soft, which it's normally not. And then Blissey is pillowcases that are silk and amazing. And just a quick thing about advertising, it's how I get to do what I do. And I understand some people get frustrated with it, but it's how I don't charge you guys. I'm never going to charge my listeners for content ever. You're never going to have to pay for an episode of anything at all. I have a Patreon. It's Patreon perks, just lives that I do, really post in there, have a good time. We're getting the Discord set up where we can all discuss the case. But to not charge you guys for episodes, I have amazing sponsors and I pick sponsors that I believe in too. I don't pick everybody. So I get samples and if I believe in it, then I do it. So I'm going to tell you right now, Pros rocks, because this low country, it was rainy all day. My hair would have been like, and it's not. So thanks to my sponsors for the week. And thank you guys, because you guys are amazing. And I appreciate you trusting me and bringing you what was said in court in this case and all the other cases we cover. So you guys have a good night. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Have a good one.